Good morning. It's 7:07 a.m. on April 1st, 2013. Here in the Pacific Northwest of the coast of North America, covered in chemtrails, they let us have two really good days. No chemtrails, nice sun. I got a lot done outside. Now we're socked in and they have us grayed over. Maybe it'll rain. I don't know. Anyway, today's Wujo is not an April Fool's joke. I don't do that kind of crap. I have a whole lot of things to go through, some of which is going to annoy a lot of people, but so anyway, we can just jump right in, I guess. There's just a lot of errata here. I think it was 2009, maybe it was 2010, early 2010 perhaps, I ran into this guy online who had had this boat he wanted to sell. And it's a really cool kind of a boat. I wanted the multi-hull. It's a Warham catamaran, Tangaroa. It had been enlarged over the original specs, and it had been made really, really skookum. It had a pilot house. It had done commercial service in Europe, and had been sailed up and down a bunch of rivers and in the Mediterranean. And I gotten hold of this guy who had the boat. He'd had it all kitted out. He is an expat Brit, and I think he'd picked it up in the north somewhere. I think it was built by a German cabinet maker, as I recall. Anyway, so he has the boat fully kitted out in somewhere north of Greece, and then he sailed it out in the Adriatic, and he sailed it around for a while, and he was doing a little bit of commercial work, and it had been his plan to sail it over here to meet with relatives in the Northwest here in Vancouver, British Columbia. And it was at that point that I would buy it from him. That was the deal. He was quite sure he didn't want it after he'd ended up sailing it about 8,000 or 9,000 miles. He was quite sure that he didn't want to live in the boat after all that time. You know, he was a guy that's called a yacht master. As a status of a certified captaincy here in the U.S. And so, you know, he knew boats, and he knew he'd want to change after 8 or 9 months, and the configuration wouldn't suit him then, and so on. And so it was a sort of a mutually happy deal. He got to sail it over. I was going to basically guarantee a purchase here if it arrived in, surveyable in a fit fashion. And so we had a happy little deal here. And I even wired him some money as a down payment, and to specifically part of it was to purchase insurance for the voyage that actually would compensate us both if the boat was damaged and we could still make a deal. If it was totaled, it I wouldn't get anything out of it. But if it was the boat was serviceable, it would. The way the deal was structured, we would be sort of like a three-way sale. Anyway, the whole point of bringing it up was that this guy was doing charter business to make money in order to be able to set sail. He had to, you don't just go hop out on the Mediterranean if you're in a little tiny sailboat where you have to rely on the wind and can't carry vast quantities of diesel fuel or something. You've got to be aware of the way in which sailing works, and that is that there's a certain time of the year that it's easiest to go from the Mediterranean to the Caribbean. And there's a certain time of the year that you can scoot through the Caribbean easier than other parts of the year. This sort of thing. And it has to do with the winds and so on. Now, a lot of that has disappeared because the old trade winds are gone. There's just no... I've got reports from people in Polynesia telling me this, too. They're just not there anymore. The winds are there, but not at the time of the year when expected. And there's something slightly off on them. But that's a separate story entirely, and probably a subject of a separate Wujo. Anyway, so getting back to the Tangaroa guy. I won't use his name, there's no point. So anyway, Tangaroa guy is going to sail on over here. And he sets out, I think, he was out there in the Med, he was taking a couple of charter groups out, and the boat was hit by basically a sea spout or a waterborne tornado. And it dismasted the boat. It also removed part of the pilot house and damaged one of the hulls. And to the extent that the boat was not barely limp back to port kind of thing with a charter group on there. And so he did really good getting his people back. No one was hurt. His boat was totaled, and he ended up having to sell it for a pittance to a repair yard just to basically get out from underneath the problem of it all, it was at that actually at that point where it was a toss-up as to whether or not it should just simply be parted out for all the marine gear. And that's usually how sailboats die, is you part out all the gear and you're left with just the hulls. But he sold it as a repairable, although very expensive repair, to a repair yard because the guy was inclined to mess around with catamarans. Anyway, so that's how I got to know this fellow. Well, very long story to get around to reporting that this guy went down to Africa. He bummed around Africa for a while. He's about maybe mid-50s. Very fit fellow, an expat Brit. He wanted nothing to do with Britain as it is now. I think he'd done Marine service and he has some kind of a pension, but in any event, he bums around Africa for a while and we've stayed in touch. And as things turned nasty in Africa, he moved north into the Mediterranean, and guess where my buddy Tangaroa dude should settle in 2011? You got it, Cyprus. So anyway, so he thinks Cyprus is just great. Now, I've got another guy who's another friend of mine who's about 73 now, 74. Anyway, and this guy, Ingemar, he's from Göteborg, and he also is a expat, although not Brit, and he's living also in Cyprus. So I've got two contacts there. Anyway, so Tangaroa guy had sent me a couple of emails when all this stuff started going down, actually about, maybe a few hours into the eruption of it all into the public's mind, when it was all fierce and everybody was full of trepidatious thoughts about what was going to happen. And this was like on the Friday that they basically shuttered the banks and stuff. Anyway, and so he's been telling me all about the... from Tangaroa dude gives me inside information and insight information, but only into the populace itself. He doesn't know any movers and shakers. He's not part of anybody's clique of power or any of that kind of thing. He's just a regular guy, let's say about, probably mid-50s. At the oldest, and he's was sort of just trying to retire and have a nice life, making a little bit of a living to supplement his pension in an enjoyable spot on the planet. And no matter where he goes, he's like me. No matter where he goes, trouble knows where he lives. It seems to rain on him. So anyway, the poor bastard's in Cyprus now, and he's Brit. And the one saving grace for him was that he did not. Against the advice of all the other expats there, he did not put his money into local Cyprus banks. His pension is through a banking structure in either Isle of Man or Isle of Wight. I don't know which up there. He mentioned it once. We'd had some real problems. I'll tell you about this. It was just rather an aside. It's just rather interesting. So I'd wired back when I wired the deposit over to him, 10%, a sign of good faith and stuff, as well as the money to pay for the insurance. Well, the boat gets wrecked and the deal's canceled, and Tangaroa guy, he's really an honorable fellow, so he wants to get the money back to me. We spent like 7 damn months trying to get that money wired back into the United States system. And I at first thought that Tangaroa guy was simply incompetent. I did not realize what the hell was going on until maybe 4 or 5 or 6 attempts, and we'd run up a huge bill by then, almost £200 in cost trying to get the money back. So anyway, this is before I built the Proa. I'll put all my money into building the Proa, so I wasn't able to buy the boat. Wouldn't be able to buy a boat anyway, but that's an aside. So anyway, what it turned out to be was this thing called SWIFT. That's the wire transfer system that, the globalists use. The Kabbalists, the minions, have set up, the Fed, and all of these guys. Anyway, and so the SWIFT system has got all these weird rules about their idea of money laundering, which means they want to be able to track other people's money and steal it. That's basically what they mean when they say this at the upper levels. And so, as we've now seen in Cyprus. Anyway, so the SWIFT system, a couple of years back, it actually has a barrier to wiring money or getting money back into the U.S. It does so because what they're trying to do is to force institutions to comply with the SWIFT terms. And so basically, because my Tangaroa guy did not have access to a bank that was SWIFT compliant, we ended up having to go through all kinds of machinations to get the money over to Canada, where a relative of his basically came across the border and gave me a check. So, it was really a goofy story. Anyway, though, so Tangaroa guy's telling me about what's going on in Cyprus, and so I'll just relay a few things that are sort of pertinent. First off, he says everybody in the populist level he says they're running around. He says they're absolutely schizo. That's his term. Basically, what's going on is they're facing a cognitive dissonance of such a huge level that they're not able to yet wrap their head around it. No one's internalized what's going on. Really, they're still in reactive mode, and according to Tangaroa guy, they are alternating between absolute fear, what am I going to do, shock kind of state, to where he says that people that lightweights can sit there and down 3 or 4 pints in that state of mind, and he says it doesn't even look like it phases them. He says, there's just no impact of the alcohol on them at all. The other state of mind is this huge burning anger. And Tangaroa guy made a point of saying that the powers that be within the local Cypriot area, not necessarily government, although they're in there too, but primarily focused on the banks. He says they are really, really, really lucky that the Cypriot population is not armed with anything, bigger than garden implements. And Tangaroa guy is of the opinion that it will not be very long before there's a garden implement revolution in Cyprus, in which a lot of people will probably be killed because they don't have any weapons. And so they'll have to be attacking, armed mercenaries, most of them not Cypriot. Most of them, it turns out, according to my source from Tangaroa guy, most of the security guys in the banking structure or German or American, American mercenaries. He says he's seen a lot of ex-Iraqi vets that have been employed there now. I think probably, contract workers from Blackwater or whatever the hell they call themselves now, Zhing or something, or Schwing Schwing or something. Anyway, so Tangaroa guy is saying that the Cypriot population is on edge, extremely angry. And he says about at any given time when you go and try and get a drink or walk down the beach or something, he says about every other person is in the alternate state of mind. And his observation before we rang off on a Skype call was that, boy, everybody had better hope that the population does not sync up into a mindset. And he says start oscillating en masse, because then you really see something. The anger level, he says, is just phenomenal. That he'd never heard such language coming out of the very reserved words of the matronly grandmother, sort of matriarchal substructure of the society before. But he says, these women are basically what has happened here is that a group of individuals that up until this point, which is the middle class and upper middle class, matriarchs had never, ever, ever suffered a financial pillaging and had never been involved in it, didn't know it was feasible, and so they're reeling in a state of shock. And he said, you have to understand the Cypriots and the nature of the social order there, but he says a lot of the families are financially not dependent, or the financiers of the families are the females. And so the female population, he says, he's seeing a lot of anger in men, there's no question. But he said the men are just standing around waiting for the women to decide which way this is going to go down. And that they're just prepared to, do their duty at that point. And he says it's just kind of a funny situation, because he says, he's talked to some of his male contemporaries there, the guys he hangs out with, and they are saying basically that, in their group and their extended family, when grandma so and so says, well, we're going to do this, it's like, well, we're going to do this. And there's just, it's just the way the nature of the social order. So pretty soon, he says, these grandmothers are going to decide what's going to happen, and then that's going to be it. Anyway, so he says it's very dire, very stressful. He's already seeing huge impacts in availability of products and prices. Hyperinflation is there, depending on what you're after. Some things have no value at all anymore. So it's just turning into kind of a weird situation relative to the locals, seen from this viewpoint of the expat. Now, I haven't talked to Ingemar in a while. I've sent him some email. All he did was to tell me that he's staying off the beach. This was maybe a week ago, because there were it was just too rowdy, too noisy, and he just didn't want any part of it there. Also, as an aside, by the way, I didn't realize it, but Martin tells me there's a huge, very large, in fact, he maybe even number more than the expat Brits, but there's a very large expat Australian community, or Cypriot Australian community there, and in Cyprus, and these guys are really pissed as well. And he said, they're the really nasty ones you got to watch out for, because he said they don't have their grandmothers there to control them at the moment. And and they're getting really noisy about what's going down, and they don't like it at all. And he says there's a lots and lots and lots of citizen meetings. And the citizen meeting part has really got the government minions upset. And that he happened to be in a pub, or not a pub, but actually a beach. He said the name, the word, and I didn't recognize it. But it, basically, it's a drinking establishment that's set up on the beach. And he said he usually is watching out towards the water and stuff, but he happened to be facing across the road there, and saw the local version of the gendarme wander on into a meeting and hustle his ass right on out, or walk into a facility of some kind. I don't know if it's retail or a house or whatever, and then almost instantly turn around and come right on out. And apparently he'd walked in on a meeting that where he wasn't welcome. So very interesting. And he came out all flushed and flustered, and a couple of guys had sort of hustled him right out the door. And my guy doesn't know what's going on there. He didn't know the particulars. He's not that clued into that particular part of the society. But he said it was a very obviously a question of you're not welcome here. And this he finds, my guy finds very interesting. So there's that. News from Cyprus. I've got a few more contacts going on through some German buddies to see how the Germans are reacting to this, because things are escalating very rapidly. Not only do we now see that the Canadians are implementing a mechanism whereby they could do this sort of thing, but we're also getting the rumors of the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, saying that they can come and yank your accounts and get anything out of your safety deposit box if they want to. I don't know if that's valid, true or not. But we do see those rumors through the internet. So the level of escalation is coming along quite nicely in this particular realm. And staying with that for a second, the idea of the realm of things financial and economic and so on, you'll probably have, many of you will have seen or received this Northeast Intelligence Network Intelligence Insider report. I have a PDF copy of it. And it's the Obama administration agenda to kill the U.S. dollar. This is by this guy, Douglas J. Hagman. Now, let me point out right off from the beginning as a linguist that the author, Douglas J. Hagman, is an alarmist. All of the language within the... don't even have to get into the main first paragraph to see the construction of the language is intended to elicit a state of alarm and anxiety. It's entirely an emotional piece. It is not there to provide any of the things that this individual claims is that he's seeking, which is the clarity, the context, and the focus with regard to all of these events that we're constantly hearing about. Okay, he does not provide clarity, he doesn't provide context, nor does he provide focus. He provides words that are alarming. Is there a defensible scenario for this administration to want to kill the dollar? And it's like, well, that was his lead-in, his teaser line. And it goes on, he's had a series of sobering discussions, and he's got highly placed sources within the intelligence world. I don't know if he does or not, but that's immaterial. But if they are highly placed, they're fucking him over, because the information that they're giving him are, while it says, the information he provided me, this is a quote from this Douglas J. Hagman, The information he provided hit me like a proverbial ton of bricks. It connects everything we are seeing playing out across the world, from the economic problems in the Europe to the U.S., DHS ammunition acquisition orders, and even the gun control debate. Then he says, if you're like me, you're looking for clarity, context, and focus with regard to all of these events. However, he doesn't provide any of that. What he does provide is alarmist language around a very spurious point, which I can derail in just a couple of stupid lines here. He goes on about, in this intelligence report thing he's got here, which is runs, I think, 5 pages in PDF format, which is being circulated around the internet, that he's stating in pejorative terms that the administration is going to kill the dollar. And then he gets all upset about it. This Douglas J. Hagman gets all upset about the dollar dying. Personally, I would jump up and down and say, hooray, 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 the dollar's dead. You know, fuck the Fed. Hooray, 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 the witch is dead. The Fed's gone. But no, this guy, Douglas J. Hagman, is mentally deluded to the point that he thinks that the United States exists because the dollar exists, and that if the dollar doesn't exist, the United States won't exist. He uses terms that state that the dollar is going to be killed, all these prejudicial terms, and he tries to be somewhat, well, I don't want to characterize, I don't know if he's trying to do anything, but the nature of the language he uses is such that it's very alarmist, and it's alarmist about a non-entity, a nothing. And he says that nothing else matters other than this economic agenda, and it's all murder and high treason and stuff. Well, Douglas J. Hagman is flat out wrong. This fellow is deluded. The dollar is the he says that we, the American people whose life work, blah, 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 is represented in the form of wealth held in U.S. dollars. That's wrong. Flat out wrong. The U.S. dollar was created in 1910, actually, as a conspiracy against the people of the United States. It does not. It is not our national identity. It is not anything that binds us together. It is a tool of our oppressors. It is not in any way worth fighting for. If the dollar is going to die, jump up and down and shout hooray, because it means that the oppressors have lost that major tool against us. I'm not going to. He wants everybody to get all whipped up here and to go on over and basically the emotional intent, in my opinion, from going through this article, is that he wants everybody to get all whipped up about the Obama administration trying to kill the dollar. And it's like, dude, the dollar's dying. Paper currencies rarely last longer than 72 years. Look at history. Ours has lasted longer than that because it was the petrodollar and because it was global reserve and because it was backed by the biggest fucking badass empire on the planet willing to bomb the shit out of old ladies and children just to perpetuate the dollar for the evil cabalists. And you want me to be upset about this? That the dollar is going to die? It's like, thank you, no, I've got real currency. I'm dealing in, you know, something other than that, you know, seeds, metals of all kinds, and bitcoins. I don't have to rely on the cabalists and their Federal Reserve shit dollar that's been enslaving the planet and causing death and destruction for more than a couple of generations now. So basically, that's my take on this Hagman fellow, is that Hagman is an alarmist and has no grasp of what's worth getting emotionally upset about. If he wants to get upset about the dollar, then he's supporting the paradigm, and he's saying, I support Bernanke, I want Bernanke's lifeblood, the dollar, to continue to go. I'm going to get out there and fight and die to kill the Obama administration because they're against the dollar. I love the dollar, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, though, you know, I mean, I'm characterizing it and putting a nasty spin on it, admittedly, but the way I read it is that this Douglas Hagman fellow, he's writing agitprop, as we used to call it in the 60s. He's an agitator. He's trying to write propaganda and create a particular emotional state that is neither helpful nor or conducive to rational thinking or an appropriate reaction. And if you read his words and you react to them as opposed to analyzing them, you're going to get upset about the death of the dollar. And you should not. You should be excited about it. Hooray, hooray. You know, Bernanke and all the other damn Zionists aren't going to have that tool to oppress you. They'll have to be naked fascists once the dollar dies. They'll have to oppress the population with guns and people in black suits and all this heavy-duty tactical gear and all that kind of crap. And when that happens, that's the end of them, because they have no moral authority once their force, which is really all they've ever had, is out in the open. Then it's all of us against them, and the system comes unglued, and then we redo it and come up with something better. But it does not depend on the dollar. The dollar is not an emotional pin for any of my actions, nor does it define my me as an American. And if it defines him as an American, I feel really sad for him. Okay, so let's get on to some of the other stuff here. Actually, something there, just as an aside, is reading his language. Maybe this guy really needs to look at his amino acid levels, because a lot of the negative language and stuff is a result of a lack of a balance between phenylamine and triosine. If you read the book, The Mood Cure, you find out that these two amino acids are used, are in combination, produce the ability to be calm and steadfast in your view of the threats that face you. And without them, without an appropriate phenylamine to triosine balance in your body, you have a tendency to be jangly and react at an emotional extreme all the time and to be running hot all the time emotionally. So, you know, I mean, just as an aside, I don't know this Hagman guy, but maybe he's amino acids are out of balance. Now, here's the real thing. This isn't prejudicial. This isn't a criticism. Amino acids are getting out of balance for everybody because of the damn chemtrails and the electromagnetic, the synergistic electromagnetic effect with the chemtrails. Bear in mind that the chemtrails ionize the whole damn planet's atmosphere, or the atmosphere you're in when the chemtrails are around you. And when they pump in these electromagnetic frequencies, they cause distortions in your body. Plus, you're breathing all that aluminum stuff, okay? And it gets into your gut, and it coats the little hairs that are called the villi that move the these little fibrous things that move the food through your alimentary canal system, right? And so here's the deal. People are known to not be absorbing amino acids correctly these days as a result of whatever. I think it's this combination, this synergistic effect between the electromagnetic radiations that are just beaming at us from all sides and what they're doing with the chemtrails and stuff. It is causing a weirdness within our bodies. Anyway, so I see lots of people that are amino acid imbalanced. And you can notice now that I'm really clued into it a little bit more, I can notice even the types of imbalances. And there's some real benefit to be gained from exploring this on a personal level and seeing if your amino acids are indeed out of whack. And there's various different ways to do it. You don't have to go and have blood tests, although you can. One way to do it is to try a little of the amino acid, and if you feel better, try a little more. If it raises your blood pressure, you know, don't take it so much and all that kind of stuff. Be smart about it, but these are all food. They should be coming in from food sources, but because the food body of the planet is so polluted, we're not getting them. And then the planet itself is polluted, which causes us individually to not be able to absorb them effectively. And so we all get a little out of whack. Now, I've had personal experience here, and we've been able to deal with amino acid issues with some people I know and actually affect their future relative to getting them out of the psychiatric industry's hands, and so be able to deal with some of their mood issues in fashions other than the psychiatric drugs that are constantly being pumped out there. And we did it with amino acids, and it worked out, you know, reasonably well. It took a while, there were issues, but it functions. And once you're onto it, boy, that's it. Psh, you know, you never ever go back, you never worry about it again, you just take the amino acid when you feel a little jangly, and that's it, it's gone. And so just as a recommendation to Douglas Hagman, he should go and take amino acids, I think, or at least check it out. His language is very alarmist in an area that should not be alarmist. We don't give a rat's ass about the dollar. I mean, that's the tool of the oppressor. It's not the national identity. It's not worth dying. What's he going to do, you know, tippy canoe and I'll die for your dollar too, you know, that kind of thing? No thank you. You know, war is a racket. It's been a racket. There's never been a war in the United States that was not started by a false flag, that wasn't a bankster war. All this is bullshit. So we need to get out of the bullshit and be smart about this and not get wrapped up in these emotional triggers. Now, getting back to the amino acid as an aside, there's this guy out there that he is a reader of mine, and he sent me some pure amino acids. His name's Tim, and he runs an outfit called Pure Bulk, where they've got all different kinds of amino acids. And the real cool thing about his site, purebulk.com there, is that he's got a information on all the amino acids, and basically you can drill in and see what they're used for. And now his approach for the amino acids is different than, you know, like a retail store, because you're buying them in bulk. It may not be suitable for people, but it's highest purity you can imagine. But a lot of people want to take them in capsules, so that might be an issue. You might have to get a capsule machine if you bought from him and run it through there. But there's no fillers or bulkers or any of that. There's just the pure amino acid. And he provides these to the high-end market, you know, the athletes, the people that are doing the nootropic stacking, probably ends up selling them to, you know, the government and the spies who are doing all their mental facility adjusting through, you know, appropriate amino acid balancing. But he has a really good product. I think he's Oregon. They come in really nice little resealable containers. Now, I actually like taking the amino acids with my green smoothie drinks. So I don't end up with pills, so I don't have to mess with capsules. But other people, like I say, you could get them put them in capsules for you. Now, just as an aside, just to let everybody know, this fellow he is a reader. He has paid for reports and stuff, and he has sent me free amino acids. And so from now on, just because I happen to mention this, I'll never take any more money from him. He's going to be comped forever on the reports. As long as I can produce them, he gets them for free, and I'll never accept another free amino acid from him, and I'll just purchase from him when I need some, assuming everything holds together here, you know, and I'm able to continue doing that. It's just the way I do things. I mean, he's got a really good product and all of that, but I won't be put in a position where there's any even the appearance of compensation for my mentioning it. You know, I don't do that kind of shit. I don't do adverts or product reviews or whatever. If I mention it, it's because I like it and I use it, and it's valuable and worth mentioning. And so that's why I'm mentioning it. And Tim, if you're listening, I'm sorry, guy, but I'm going to have to send you those damn reports free. And if you mail me any of this stuff, I'll have to just say, sorry, refused. You know, I'm a hard case about it, but that's just the way it is. So anyway, you know, maybe somebody should talk to Doug Hagman and say, hey, you know, how are your amino acids? You know, let's check this out. You know, let's be a little bit less agitation and less propagandistic about the damn dollar. Unless, of course, he's being paid for that. I mean, I don't know the guy. I don't read his column or anything, and I've never really paid that much attention to him except for a few times when he's been intruded into my reality by one form or another. Something else, too, about sleeping, about the amino acids. You may be experiencing the what they're calling ascension energies or whatever, and you know your sleep is all disrupted in a way that wasn't true 4, 5, or 6 years ago. This may be independent of age, so you can't blame it on that. In other words, young people are experiencing it, old people are experiencing it. Safeway workers are experiencing it. I've seen it happen where I was up there at a Safeway store, and there's behind this woman, and she was talking to the checkout counter, and they both were awake at 1:30 in the morning, couldn't understand it, couldn't get back to sleep for a couple hours, were really annoyed by it, and were talking about it to each other. Well, I'm picking up those conversations on the net all over to hell and gone. at least I was. Anyway, I'll get to that in a second. So if you are experiencing those kind of things, especially with sleep, you may find that the amino acid tryptophan, or its processed version, which is, I think, the 5-HDE or HPE or something, look it up. There's a processed version that they sell also that's closer to what the body does to it. The tryptophan and its processed version may assist in sleeping. Personally, I'm experiencing that. I'm up every day at a shockingly scary hour, and I've tried adjusting my sleep by going to bed earlier. It doesn't seem to help. I've tried doing all different other kinds of things that, you know, so for instance, you could take Jiogalong or Gynostemma, which is an herb called immortal tea by the Chinese, and it helps you get sleep. Doesn't help you stay asleep, though. So if you're going to wake up at 1:30, you're still going to wake up at 1:30, even though you get to sleep a few minutes earlier. Usually it takes people that are, you know, don't have insomnia or sleeping difficulties about 19 minutes to get to sleep. And with this tea, you might get to sleep in, you know, 17 minutes or 15 or something like that. But it doesn't help you. It doesn't help you stay asleep when those energies hit you as the planet rotates around. Now, if you'll note, the part of the issue with the people waking up, if you want to go and plot it, relative to people talking, and you find out, you ask them, well, what time was this that you woke up? And they'll say, well, blah, blah, and you plot that. You plot a bunch of them, and you get a general idea of when people are waking up. And then you go and look, it's related to the sidereal component of the rotation of the Earth. That is to say, the following is my understanding, having examined this. If, for instance, on a particular day I woke up at, say, 3 in the morning and couldn't get back to sleep, and I went and I looked at what was going on at 3 in the morning relative to the rotation of the Earth, on that particular day I may find that at 3 in the morning the Earth had just rotated around to the point that the dark rift at the middle of the Milky Way galaxy was, quote, visible from my perspective on the planet. This is really a difficult conversation to get, or a difficult idea to get across in conversation, because you really need pictures and arrows and lots of arm waving to show the whole thing on a giant whiteboard. But what I think is happening is this, that as I go to sleep, the planet is between me and the dark rift. And as it rotates around, it rotates around to the point where I'm up on top of the planet relative to the dark rift, and when I come up over the visible edge, so to speak, I'm getting some kind of energetic effect from the dark rift at the middle of this of the Milky Way galaxy. And from that point on, my sleep is disturbed. I've been able to plot this on my own with my own sleep and the actions of the planet sidereally. I've done some plotting on an aggregate that I had Igor swoop out of a couple of fora for me where they were talking about this, and we did a little scatter chart, and we showed that more or less that seems to be what's going on. Now, of course, the issue here is that sidereally, it's not always going to be 3 a.m. in the morning, and that is because of where the planet is relative to where the dark rift is, and the rotation, and our spiral behind the sun. And so it's going to fluctuate, and you'll see that it moved, the time the energies hit you will fluctuate, and it'll start off at, say, 5 in the morning, work its way down to about 1:30 to 12:30, something like that in the morning, and then, of course, that was when they did the daylight savings, and then it'll work its way back out to 3, 4, or 5, and then back down in this sinusoidal wave as we go around, spiraling around behind the sun. So it's not going to be consistent, it's not going to be constant, and this is what's going to really get a lot of people messed up about it. It will consistently appear, but the timing won't be consistent. And it'll constantly be in your life, but the timing won't be constant every day. And so it's one of those things where it'll be a rhythmic issue that you'll have to deal with as we go forward, in my understanding. I'm investigating some things that may assist in this. I don't know. I'm going to do another Wujo if I find any positive effects there. I'll let you know. But indeed, some people are getting some minor level of relief with tryptophan. It aids them sleeping a little longer. They sleep a little deeper, but they're still waking up around this, early in the morning thing. So there's that. Now, in that, like I say, you can get tryptophan from Tim at Pure Bulk. And, Kathy, well, she takes them in the little pills, but I don't mind mixing it in with stuff. And it makes it easier to digest as a vegetarian, because a lot of powder, there's no little sticks to help it go down. I'm used to my sticks and twigs and roots. Money, bitcoins, and government fears, and that's basically what you got out of George Ure's article. His anti-Bitcoin discussion was, he'd made up his mind before he wrote the article that he was anti-Bitcoin, that he wasn't going to pursue it, and that his rationale, and then he came up with all these reasons as to why he was anti-Bitcoin, and you'll note that every single one of his reasons all come down to a fear of government, and they're a fear of what government can do to him, and therefore he won't get involved in the Bitcoins. It's kind of a weird little bit of logic. It sort of quasi makes sense at one level, but of course we need to note that those are George's fears about government. Government's grossly ineffective. George can't read code. He doesn't know how the structure of human-to-human currency really works at that level. It's beyond the ken of most economists, because all economists are trained with a central focus view. George is a paradigm supporter in the sense he can't imagine the world without government, in spite of the fact that he's afraid of it, and he doesn't like it and so forth. If it went away, I think it would really disturb his viewpoint, especially since there would be no longer any form of an economy. And also, by the way, Bitcoins do away with the whole... with much of the tools that the economists are used to, which is this central focus numeric reporting system that is available. So, you know, it's understandable that George doesn't get into Bitcoin. He's just of that generation. You know, he's reached the point where he's a paradigm supporter, and also, like I say, he's very much afraid of government, and so he just doesn't want to get into it. None of his concerns are valid, in my opinion. And Bitcoins are going to come on out and kick the whole planet. And also, if you really want a clue as to what's going on, go over to Russia Today and read their article on Bitcoins challenging the U.S. dollar for supremacy and what's going to happen there. Now, as a result of, now we've come all the way back around, the Bitcoin thing is also, a lot of people are having trouble because it's not simple. It's a new generation kind of stuff, right? Gold and silver were real simple. You know, the abstractions of paper money were slightly more complex. And then we go through the abstractions of debt and all the other things, all the way up to the mega abstractions of the derivatives, which are going to, you know, basically kill the financial system. So, by the way, Hagman, it's not the dollar being killed by the Obama administration. They've got less control over that than they do over their farts. They've got far less control over the dollar than they do over their farts after a chili pig out. So that idea is just absurd. The nature of money and how our system is going to survive, or what's going to survive of the system, is kind of an open-ended. Our data doesn't suggest much because we end up with these data holes and a data gap that forms in May. And as I've noted on our site, we're starting to see some of the data holes. They're coming from a couple of different viewpoints. A couple of different sides of things. We've actually got physical disruptions going on in a number of undersea cables and connections from countries. There's the all kinds of minor warfare going on all over in the Middle East area that's causing disruptions on a daily basis. Plus, we now have this new effect of all of those cause data holes for us because our spiders go to reach for something and it's just not there and they come back with no data. And so we've got those going on, but we've also got this new setup here where there's apparently a bunch of corporations that are fighting it out on the internet with each other with denial of service attacks. Some of the denial of service attacks are so strong as to cut off whole segments of the net for periods of time such that we time out on our spiders, because our spiders have a retry feature at various different levels based on what they would usually find at that particular area. But we're starting to run into retry timeouts. So it's just because they can't get through. And so we're getting more data holes from that. So the data holes are actually growing rather rapidly, and it's somewhat disturbing. We're going to be doing our immediacy data intelligence report for this this week for the 1st of April. But right now we've had to rerun spiders and so restart them, and so we know it's starting to affect us. And we're just uncertain of what we're going to run into when we get the data and start doing that level of processing. I won't know until I get into it late Tuesday and early Wednesday as to what we're actually seeing. But I know our flow rates are way down based on the holes we're running into. So the data holes are here. This is not a good sign. The data holes were forecast as a result of that 2003 data set that had that just really nice blend of the long-term and the shorter-term data. And the data holes are in a Swiss cheese kind of fashion. They grow over a short period of time to become our data gap. And it's actually starting to manifest. So they were forecast to more or less take over in May and drop us out of this business as of May of this year. And we've had that forecast since 2003. And damn, it's starting to roll on in. Okay, let's see. A couple of other small items here. I have heard, a couple of people have sent it to me, I have heard the Foster Gamble interview with Sean David Morton, And I want to point out that I think that Foster Gamble is using doublespeak, even if he's not necessarily aware of it. Here's a couple of examples. If you want to go and listen to just the first part of the example, you'll hear Foster Gamble make the following statements, and I'm paraphrasing. I'm not doing an exact quote. But he says that he's not rich. He doesn't deny being the sole heir. He says that his family doesn't participate in the running of the Gamble company. And then he says he's six generations out. And he also makes the statement that money leaves the family by the sixth generation, which is bullshit, by the way. That's a lie. That's not true. If that were true, we wouldn't have the Queen of England or any of the monarchists or any of the great fortunes anywhere on the planet. Some of these are now into their 20th and 30th handed down generation. Some of these Kabbalists. So the sixth generation rule is bullshit. They tried that in Japan and they couldn't even legislate it into existence to get rid of a mega wealth. So he's claiming that he doesn't have any money, that basically he's given what we down here in the lower middle class, we call it poor mouth. He's doing the poor mouth routine. And that's fine. And he says he's at risk of losing his house. And it's like, well, okay, Foster, hey, welcome to the real world here, guy. And then also, I want to point out, he also says he inherited a shitload of money from his grandparents. He uses the word comfortable, which is a rich person's euphemism for stinking filthy rich, to where I never have to even worry about the word called survival, nor do I have any consequences on a daily basis for any of my actions because I have money to defray those consequences, basically, for the rest of my life. And that's what the word comfortable means when it's used from that viewpoint, from the people who are rich. It means stinking rich. You'll note that he also says that he's so stinking rich still that his son does not have an issue of what he wants to what he must do to survive, but rather has the luxury of being able to go on out and walk around and decide what he wants to do and where he can put his best effort and so on. And I applaud the statement that, he wants to just go on out and be of service to humanity, that kind of thing. That's fine. But look, Foster, look what that says. It looks like you're saying that you're still so rich that this kid has no worries about surviving, doesn't have to go on out and get a menial job at a McDonald's to start paying for his student loans. Does he even have student loans? And it's like Foster is saying, I don't want to get on his case. I don't know the man. I don't know that he's disingenuous. I don't know that he's trying to lie to my face, but he's saying things that are doublespeak. From my viewpoint down here, being a poor bastard who's always had to work for survival his entire life and who will be working until the day he dies, the language that I hear coming from Foster Gamble is two-faced. He's saying, I'm poor, I'm going to lose my house. Well, his house is probably bigger than my fucking lot. And, the fact of the matter is, if he's going to lose his house, it's because he was stupid enough to put $4.5 million into a really stupid movie called Thrive, which is not ever going to wake anybody up. You can't wake people up. It's like my pappy used to say, my pappy from Missouri, you can't teach pigs to sing, boy. It ain't going to work, and you're just going to annoy the pig. And so, Foster Gamble is trying to teach pigs to sing. When the sheeple want to wake up, as we all know, you wake up. Not because someone comes along and puts a movie in front of you. If it were that fucking easy, it would have happened a long time ago. The basis, the underlying basis for the Thrive movie and everything is flawed. And, I'm sorry, Foster, if you're a legitimate stooge in this whole thing and you've been played and are not a player, dude, you've been suckered. It was stupid to put $4.5 million into that with your house and your family at risk. See, that's like, that makes no sense to us guys down here who've had to survive all our lives. To put a relative at risk for something like that, for a movie whose premise is flawed from the beginning, and you're never going to wake anybody up with that movie who wasn't already awake. They're going to be there or not. You maybe have made it a little bit easier for some of them, but you haven't aided anybody seriously, and you put yourself at risk for it. I actually don't know about the Foster guy, see, because he's never addressed the issue of the symbology. And the symbols are all through that thing. I can sit there and count 13 just without even trying in that poster. And in the first few minutes there, I get the movie, I get all of the inundation of the symbols, and it's like, dude, either address it or not, and so he's not, and so in my opinion, since he never addresses the symbols there, he never comes on out and says, yes, you could see these as the evil Illuminati symbols, and maybe I should have a little addendum to the movie saying I didn't intend it that way, and here's how they came out, rather than allow him to just stand. But since he doesn't do that, I am no longer really questioning about his motivation, in the sense that if he doesn't deny the symbols, well, then he's supporting them. So it's kind of like, you know, if you're standing there and you got a big giant swastika over your head on a socialist democratic flag, and you're standing there hanging onto the pole that holds that flag up, you need to disabuse me of the idea that you're supporting National Democratic Socialism Nazism. You see my point, right? Or not. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. But in any event, yes, I listened to the interview with Sean David Morton, and Foster Gamble's real big on this truth out, and he's real big on calling Sean out on all the things that Sean said. And we have to be, you know, quite clear about this. Sean David Morton is going to get more trouble from his mouth than it'll ever get him out of trouble. He's just that kind of guy. And he said things that were perhaps imprudent. But I'm not saying things in an imprudent fashion. I'm saying I don't understand Foster Gamble. He's not an honest player, in my opinion, because he does not deny the symbology that is all to hell and gone through his works. And he's either ignorant of it, in which case that's fine. You can come on out and say, hey, guys, I was suckered. I was ignorant. I didn't know that these artists did this while I wasn't looking, that they sold me on this idea for these symbols, and I didn't know what the hell these symbols were, you know? We're all there, we're human, but he doesn't do that, and he comes across with this doublespeak in these interviews, so, you know, I wrote in a letter to him and told him, you know, the concerns of rich men bore me, and as far as the Foster Gamble stuff, I don't care about Thrive, and it didn't change my mind to hear him on Sean David Morton with his duplicitous statements about his, or, you know, self-contradictory statements. Because I don't know that he's lying, you know, that's the hell of it. He comes across okay, he comes across as, you know, one of these new age phony guys that I don't really like and associate with because they annoy me at a personality level. And it's probably DNA, you know, his DNA and my DNA are just not compatible. And I'm not a joiner, he's trying to get things to join, you know, that kind of a deal. So we're just coming at things from a different viewpoint, and I don't understand why he does not deny the symbols that are all to hell and gone around him. He probably doesn't see him, or he doesn't want to see him, or some reason, but in any event, that's just our particular point of contention. And to those people that sent me the interview, thank you very much, but no, I'm not buying the bullshit. Just because he said it, don't make it true, and the way he said it really is disturbing. Also, as a note here on my little note on the Wujo last about the channelers and psychics and so on and the Bitcoin thing. Bitcoin's not a Ponzi scheme. It's not central. It's human to human. That fits in with our half-past human philosophy. They call it peer-to-peer, but really it's human to human. Peer-to-peer refers to the machinery that connects the humans. In this case, because it's a currency, an abstraction that operates beyond the peer-to-peer level, it actually operates at a human-to-human level. And so I do not find it feasible that the government can in any way control the Bitcoin phenomena itself, since it's planetary and it's human to human, and it's encrypted. And it's encrypted at a particular way, and you'll notice that I think one of the single objections that George Ure had to Bitcoin was that the government could just simply filter the hash algorithms in the emails, which is quite true. But what he fails to understand is that particular hash algorithm merely is an identifier for, it doesn't identify a Bitcoin transaction in any possible way. The addresses can be anything. The hashing approach is such that if the government decided to, by that I mean the government that George Ure fears is the Kabbalistic triumvirate of the U.S. political system, the British banking system, and the religious structures. Okay, so that's basically the government, as George is afraid of it. But he's specifically focused on the manifestation of the United States, the United States corporate government, as typified by the minions and Obama and all of those guys. And here's the thing. If his objection is not sound at a technical level, because they cannot shut down the hash algorithms, you can't shut down any hashing tags throughout any of the emails without basically shutting down the system itself. And this falls from two different levels. The first is that there's just so much hashed traffic that is not Bitcoin, that Bitcoin represents a small infinitesimal fraction of what's out there in a hashed and encrypted format. So to shut down encryption would be a virtual impossibility. You'd shut down probably, I don't want to hazard a number, but well over half of the internet traffic would fall into the algorithms that could be looked at as a potential Bitcoin transaction, because they're encrypted at that level. The phone conversations and movies being transmitted, you know, all different kinds of crud from Comcast to your little local router, you know, all the Wi-Fi instructions, all this stuff is sent as though, and basically it's all in the same kind of an encrypted format that you find at the low level that supports Bitcoin. So so it's so low at that level, you would have to shut down basically the whole internet at that, or you'd get rid of about half of the traffic. Now, here's the other part. In order to do this, you would have to you have to pass all of the email traffic through a central algorithm, not necessarily through the same servers. You could have it in a DNS fashion. That's how I would design it. But ultimately, you'd have a system where all of the email traffic and all internet traffic would have to go through your control in order for you to search for these algorithms if you wanted to shut down the internet or shut down the Bitcoin traffic and seize control of it. And see, here's the problem again. You would basically have the United States government in the position of having to filter in real time the whole internet. Now, I know there are people out there running around saying that there's, you know, computers that are existent, that are super smart, that are AI, which is a scary buzzword in the new age movement, meaning artificial intelligence, and that these computers, some of them are even hooked up to human brains that have been removed from humans, and they're able to run at fantastic speeds and so on. And that's fine, but there's 7 billion of us chatting all the time, and there's all this kind of traffic going on. I don't buy any of the AI stuff, by the way, because I've been a computer programmer for so long. And my dad's from Missouri. I'd have to see that sucker and type on the keyboard before I would believe that the AI was in any thing close to artificially intelligent. And there's a difference between artificially intelligent, by the way, and creative and inventive and having ingenuity and being able to anticipate or any of these kind of things. Artificially intelligent, from the viewpoint of a computer programmer, is very specifically defined and usually goes to the idea of vast quantities of data handling. So, that having been said, in order to shut down the, as George Europe proposed, the government might do, could do, he thought, one of his fears, was that they could simply sweep the traffic and eliminate any of your transactions back and forth with people. And I say it's not feasible, just on the basis alone of they'd have to sweep all the internet traffic just to see what was there. Then each and every bit of the internet traffic that they swept up, emails, etc., that may have in these forbidden, verboten transactions in them, would have to be analyzed to the point you'd have to decide, was it a transaction you were trying to screen out? And even if they were blindingly fast, even if they were just the supercomputer fast on doing this, and they knew the algorithms to decrypt the traffic with no brute force required, and they just knew it, they had the code to decrypt it just instantly, even so, it would bring the internet down to its knees. It would force it down to a crawl and make it effectively non-usable, as we are starting to see now with some of these corporate-to-corporate denial of service attacks that are going on that are causing our data holes. And they are just seriously brute force attacks on each other that are impacting the net as a whole. So imagine what would happen if the United States government decided it wanted to control Bitcoin and therefore had to have all net traffic go through its central algorithms. Even if they weren't going through the same server, there would be times where you'd even have the net shut down as all the central servers that it was using to screen your emails had to update their algorithm for our inevitable response in a creative fashion. And a couple of quick things here. Just to sort of finish up, The issue of my supporting Bitcoin, I've gotten a lot of criticism recently. I get a lot of criticism all the time. People don't like me. That's fine. Or they don't like what I'm saying. That's fine, too, because I say a lot of stuff that really irritates. I've been supporting Bitcoin for some time now. I investigated it well over a year ago and noodled on it and read the code and poked at it and thought about it and tried to figure it from a cracker viewpoint, tried to figure it from a number of viewpoints, and then finally, after having really noodled on it for some time, decided about a year ago I was really going to be a supporter of it because I just couldn't see the flaws in it. Yeah, it can be cracked. Yes, we've had Bitcoin raids and so on, but I would point out a couple of things, okay? First off, the Kabbalists are stealing from you constantly. Just keeping your wealth in dollars, they're stealing from you through inflation and hyperinflation. So occasionally a few people rip off an institution within the Bitcoin world. Well, occasionally a few people rip off an institution in the real world. You know, shit happens. It's going to continue to happen. Now, the thing about Bitcoin is that Bitcoin, is when an institution gets ripped off and a flaw is exposed, then all institutions benefit instantly, unlike the real world, where one bank can get thieved and the banks don't tell each other what the hell's going on and how they are vulnerable and so on. And so that same level of thievery can be used on other banks, just the way the paradigms differ. In human-to-human world, it is continually self-examining a feedback kind of loop that makes it get better over time. Real world system of the abstractions they've got going is the reverse of that. It's a system in which the real world feedback loop is curtailed because of the secrecy and the whole thing. That's my main bitch with the U.S. government, is the secrecy and lies, not its and all the actions that result from that. But in any event, so there's that. So the Bitcoin world is vulnerable to occasional raids, as is the real world. My trying to get people into Bitcoin has nothing to do with making myself a real packet of money. I don't have very many Bitcoins. I gave away a bunch of the things just to keep people interested during the period of time when it wasn't worth very much. I knew this period was coming. I think we're going to hit hyperinflation, where Bitcoins are the first indicator of that. I say first because I still have that silver coin. And here's the thing. Silver is going to escalate hugely, but because the powers that be know that silver and gold are the indicator, the final indicator of hyperinflation, they've been sitting on this with a control system that is just magnificent to behold. This system should have cracked in the year 2000 with the internet thing, and the gold should have gone batshit then, and it indicated the system that was crumbling, but it didn't. It's been so controlled for all these years that we have in my mind, there's no reason why the gold and silver market should break loose until the hyperinflation is bust out elsewhere, and it's busting out now in Bitcoin. So silver and gold, in my opinion, as you know, as people hold those, will owe Bitcoin because they powers that be so control the silver and gold market that hyperinflation will never bust out there until it is first seen elsewhere. And then those people who are not able to grasp the ideas behind Bitcoin, the complexities, nor are they able to work with the complexities online, will still feel the hyperinflationary reality emerging around them, and will thus then go and look for things they do understand, which is what will put the pressure on the silver and gold. Make sense? Right now, there's no pressure on silver and gold because people are deluded into thinking the hyperinflation is bypassing them somehow. They're just not even looking at it in that fashion. Now it's coming out. We're seeing it in these thefts that are occurring in Cyprus and then the subsequent follow-on. Same thing that happened to Greece. The situation with Greece, the major impact of the hyperinflation immediately thereafter, a couple of years back here, in the Greek problem, was the hyperinflation started hitting food. Well, it's already hitting that way now in Cyprus. So they're starting to hit into food. The hyperinflation is interesting because it goes to those real things that we really need. Now, we don't really need Bitcoin, but in a sense, it is as real. It is more real than the U.S. digidollars, because here is a human-to-human currency, whereas I have no control over nor faith in As my earlier statement to this Hagman dude, I have no faith in the Federal Reserve note, and I don't identify it with it or any of that kind of stuff. And I know it's continually degrading, and if I had any kind of wealth in Federal Reserve notes, I'd want it to get the fuck out of there and put it in something else. You know, even if it was seeds or, you know, a big pile of potting soil even is worth more than, you know, it's a hell of a statement, but I'm going to make it right now. You're probably better off putting your money in manure than you are into the U.S. dollar. And that, you know, if Hagman wants to go and defend something that's worth less than manure, well, he can go have at it. But I'm not going to be involved with that kind of bullshit, that kind of misguided understanding of reality. Okay, now, another thing. Let me get back to my previous statement and finish that up. I'd put a rather snide note on my Wujo site about psychics and channelers and how they didn't see Bitcoin coming and how I'd been telling you about a year ago, get into Bitcoin, it makes a lot of sense. Okay, well, the psychic and channelers are usually in my mind, they're full of shit. They occasionally have hits, just like everybody does, but they're not consistent and so on. There are very few of them are self-examining. Very few of them are in any way purifying themselves. I'm appalled by the idea of people hanging around the feet of some of these channelers. And you see the channelers, you know, are chain-smoking alcoholics when they're not in that alternate flipped-out personality. And would anybody in their right mind, you know, well, I guess these people must not be in their correct mind if they're following the advice of a chain-smoking alcoholic in a trance-altered state. Actually, and the thing, here's my bitch about all channelers and psychics. They don't provide any practical assistance. Where were all the damn psychics and where were all the damn channelers 2 years ago when Bitcoin was really getting into that interesting thing and you could have gotten in there for pennies? Where were they saying, hey, pay attention, you know, some shit's happening here? See, they are not psychic. They are not particularly, they're not channeling any kind of telepathic, omniscient, knowing any kind of thing, space alien or interdimensional being. Most of these individuals, I've been to two instances I've been involved with or come in contact with people when they were in a, that were channelers, and they're very easy to play with the key and disrupt the whole thing. But in any event, that's an aside. So my thing is, you know, watch out for reliance on channelers and psychics because they don't see shit like Bitcoin coming up or hyperinflation or any of this. And they're just not giving you any kind of practical advice as to what's going on. And so basically, like I say, I've always had the thing about even if these channelers were legit, even if they were in contact with the giant whoozy whatsy floaty thing off of the Pleiades that, you know, says it's talking through them to this telepathic tube into their brain, even if that were absolutely true, why the hell should I care? This whoozy was it out in the Pleiades ain't telling me shit about what's going on here on the planet that's worth knowing. You know, yeah, all this light and love stuff is fine, but it does not advance the species. We've been hearing that for 50,000 years, and look where we're at now. And for the last 12,000 years, we've been hearing it pretty damn consistently, and I think a lot of it comes from the Mr. Global and his group. And it's, you know, just yet another distraction, yet another way to keep the masses entertained, yet another instance of the opiate of the masses, which is religion. And you'll note a lot of these channelers, all of it is cult of personality kind of stuff. I don't think many of them would really even, wouldn't like to have me in the room with them. The issue of the energy stuff is quite interesting, as is the altered state. And I'd love to go and mess with a few heads that way just as an experiment for this thing about the key forces. And then also, okay, so I've been taken to task about promoting bitcoins because everybody thinks I've got a bazillion of them and I'm going to make myself a bazillionaire. Well, if bitcoins go to $1 million each, I will become a millionaire. A multimillionaire because I got more than two bitcoins. But no, I'm not going to get up there with, you know, Bill Gates wealthy on this kind of stuff. But hey, there will be people that do. And in my mind, the Bitcoin value is not that. It's not the appreciation. It's not the the potential to make a killing in the sense of this what they call the RV, which is not remote viewing, but is revaluation of the Iraqi dinar, which is a bunch of horse shit. There's no reason at all for the Iraqi government to ever revalue the dinar relative to any other currency. And in fact, there's a lot of, except downward, because the economic impetus at the moment is this current, all currencies are fighting to be the lower currency to increase economic activity and exports and imports, or reduce imports. So in my mind, the Iraqi dinar revaluation is horseshit. It's a con job, a scam. Who is doing it and why? It's open to speculation. Same thing with this Nasara crap, and the same thing with David Wilcock and the giant, huge cavern of ultimate gold, in which all the gold of the planet that's ever been taken out is hidden in this in these big caverns. And it's like, you know, David, have you ever stopped to think that if there's all that amount of gold on the planet, you don't take that amount of gold and multiply it by today's price? You reduce today's price down to basically nothing. I mean, if gold is so, if we have, you know, you say that I've heard the statement repeatedly. I used to hear it when I was a kid in the South. You know, the road of heaven is paved with gold. Y'all coming up, be saved. You know, these revival meetings, right? And they describe heaven as the, you're going up, you sit next to God, and he's on this big throne of gold and a palace of gold and all this kind of stuff. It's like, guys, if your road is paved with gold, gold is worth about as much as asphalt. You know, gold is worth as much as asphalt under those circumstances. If gold is being used to build your chair, it's worth as much as wood. In fact, probably even less, because it'll be cold on your butt. I'd rather have a nice warm wooden chair that at least my butt has a chance to heat up a little bit. Same thing is true of the building. You know, if you're using gold for bricks, it's worth about as much as a brick. And that's my argument with David Wilcock and his whole idea that there's the spurious idea, in my opinion, that there's vast quantities of gold hidden, stashed away in order to create a point of scarcity the way they do with diamonds. Okay, and that's the whole thing. Diamonds are an exact illustration, David. Pay attention here. The De Beers people keep vast quantities of diamonds off the market in order to prop the price up, because they know if the diamonds hit the market, then the price falls down to the point where everybody's got diamonds in their pocket and we're using them for pocket change. Well, the same thing is true of gold. If there's that much gold out there, we'll be using it for pocket change and walking around with this stuff. We'll be having, you know, gold-tipped shoelaces because it'll be so cheap that we can afford to do that. The increase in the volume of gold decreases the value of it. You know, pay attention to economics, guys. It has nothing to do with your idea that you can take the existent price of gold and multiply it against some huge increase in volume to get a supposed theoretic value. The value is artificial and is based on supply and demand. So the ignorance that is out there in the Nasara and the revaluation and the hidden giant caverns of gold stuff is staggering. I mean, the level of ignorance is just abysmal. And that's where we're at with that. And also one other last thing, and I got to get off of here and let everybody go back to their business. Yes, indeed, I have, okay, let me finish that stuff about the Bitcoin. I'm never going to be wealthy on Bitcoins. My idea was to get people excited about it. Anybody that happened to listen to me and pay attention could go on in and investigate the Bitcoin on their own and see the potential there in a number of different ways, not only for secure transactions, not only to remove yourself from the influence of the government. And I'm not saying taxation at all. That was George Ure's big thing. I'm just saying I don't like government tracking me. It's my religious issue, you know. Church of the Greater Paranoid, greater and lesser unreformed Orthodox paranoid. But in any event, my point is not to, you know, enrich ourselves by in a Ponzi scheme or a pump and dump or any of that. I'll never be, unless Bitcoins go to become $1 million each, I'll never be a multimillionaire from Bitcoins, because it'll take that to get the two of my Bitcoins up to that level of value. So, and then one last thing. To those people that were bitching and moaning at me about my objections to Thrive, I've sent emails to this Foster fellow. He has my phone number if he wants to talk with me, but I'm not going to stand there and promote his agenda, nor do a radio-style interview like Sean does, where I don't hammer the bastard on all the symbology. I don't care about his little vortex thing. I've had my own enlightenment experiences. I'm not impressed by them, and so I'm impressed by his understanding and statement and factual description of how these symbols came to be in his work. And other than that, his decisions to put his money as he wants, I don't find to be heroic or any of the other characterizations. He's not Gandhi. He's not even, what was the guy's name? Not Tolstoy or Trotsky, whoever gave away all of his money prior to the Bolshevik Revolution to help people survive in that terrible winter in Moscow. This is not that case. As far as I know, Foster didn't give away all of his money. As far as I know personally, his house, he says it's he's at risk of losing his house, but I don't know what that means. The guy uses the word comfortable to describe mega wealthy, in my opinion. And so his language is suspect. And yes, I've given him my phone number, and if he wants to call me, he's welcome to. It isn't going to do much, because as I pointed out to people that wanted to intrude on this, it's a bad relationship that starts out with Foster trying to convince me that he was both stupid and easily led, because that's really the only solution I see to my conundrum with his continuing to promote this movie, even after he's been told there's all of these symbols involved. And by the way, as I say, I happen to think that spending the money on the movie was misguided. Stupid, in my opinion. And so, that's it. That's it. Those are the last of all of my bitches for the day. But the thing I really wanted to get across was that the situation in Cyprus is really chaotic. It's rolling north, and Tangaroa dude says it's very interesting, and he'll be feeding me bits and pieces via Skype as long as we maintain the connection. And then also to point out, and one last thing was that the data gap holes, that the holes that form themselves into the gap in the Swiss cheese fashion, are appearing as forecast in a strength that we had not anticipated. And it was also rather shocking to find that the holes are being created by dynamically by these corporations that are out there slinging denial of service attacks at each other. Stupid damn things. Corporations, I mean. Okay, guys. I'll be talking later when I've got more shit to bitch about. Bye.